And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The eternal light.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations bring you Chapter 7 of The Eternal Light. This public service program is prepared under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today, written by Morton Wishengrad, features Roger D. Coven.
Listen to the sound. Listen to the sound of the iron loom. We ride invisible in the stratosphere on a filament of air, but the sound weaves like a shuttle. Eastward from England, westward from Russia, crossing near the place where the 53rd parallel intersects the 13th meridian. A place called Berlin. And east I ride, and west I ride on the flying shuttle you call a liberator.
Pilot to waist gunner. Pilot to waist gunner. Hey, Joe Berger, wake up.
Yeah, Pat?
We're over White Russia. Look out till it's 9 o'clock. That's Mogilev.
You sure?
Sure, I'm sure. It's Mogilev, all right. Thought you'd want to know.
Yes. Yes, I do want to know. I want to know and to look down on Mogilev from the sky. Staff Sergeant Joe Berger looking down on Mogilev from the sky. Abraham Berger looked up once. Looked up once from the ghetto. I wonder what he saw. Perhaps a blackbird flying or a dry leaf on the wing. Perhaps nothing. In 1880 in the ghetto of Mogilev, my father did not look up much.
What is there to look up for? In the ghetto, you do not look up. If God is with you, you sit in the synagogue and read the Holy Scroll. And if not, you stand in the store beside Uncle Eliezer to wait on a customer.
What will it be today, Mrs. Bernstein?
What would it be, Eliezer? A present for the Tsar? Tearing! And not from the top of the barrel.
Abraham, you heard Mrs. Bernstein. A herring, not from the top of the barrel. Be quick. And wrap it up in clean newspaper.
I wrapped it in clean newspaper for Mrs. Bernstein. A woman with a wig as to a head, a wart as to a nose, and a stutter as to a tongue. A pious woman, God bless her. This is how I helped Uncle Eliezer. Uncle Eliezer was very good to me. He was as good to me as my father would have been. May he rest in peace. Sabbath Eve, I would go to the synagogue with him and say amen in all the right places. And then we would go home, and Aunt Bryna would put the meal before us. And then we would sing Shalom Aleichem, which is proper. And he would take my aunt by the hand and read to us from the 31st chapter of the book of Proverbs, which is also proper for the Sabbath.
Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool.
He read this to us each Sabbath, as was done in every household where the wife is good and beloved. This is a fitting thing to be read on the Sabbath. For is not the Sabbath meant for joy and for happiness, and not for sorrow?
Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gate.
Then Aunt Bryna died in childbirth. They wrapped her in linen. My uncle himself put the three pieces of broken pottery on her lips and eyes. He would let no one else do it. Many weeks later, when he had begun to speak again, he took me to the Hader. It was a good school, and the teacher said to me,
"Listen, boy, here is your first lesson. As Hillel says, an empty-headed man cannot be sin-fearing, nor can an ignorant person be pious, nor can a shame-faced man learn, nor a passionate man teach. Remember that. Now perhaps you can tell me something. Which is greater, the priesthood or the Torah?"
This, you will admit, is not a question which can be answered standing on one leg, especially for a boy. God was with me, though, and I answered that the Torah was greater than the priesthood. And Uncle Eliezer smiled for the first time. And the teacher gave me a pinch on the ear. And so I went to Heder and learned. I do not wish to boast, but when I was 2 years old, soon after my father and mother died of the smallpox, may they rest in peace, I could already say the alphabet from Aleph to Soph. It was natural, therefore, that I should be a quick student. Yet, strangely, Uncle Eliezer was not satisfied. For he went to enter me in the Russian school, where I could learn to be an engineer.
I'm sorry, but there is a quota, my friend. Only one Jewish student for every 9 Christians.
But Your Excellency...
9 to 1, my friend. That's the quota.
Then can Abraham be one? He is a fine boy.
No doubt. But he'll have to wait his turn.
How long will it take?
3 years, perhaps 5, 7, who knows?
Suppose the ghetto organized its own school.
That is not allowed. It is the Tsar's law.
I see. I suppose it's no use, then.
That depends.
Oh, you mean...
Uh-huh.
But you say the quota is fixed.
And it also can be adjusted, if you know how. Say, for 50 rubles?
The Tsar's law, Your Excellency.
The Tsar is in St. Petersburg drinking vodka. This is Mogilev. 50 rubles and the boy's admitted. What do you say?
I'll have to think about it.
Don't think too long. Next week, the price will be 75 rubles.
I remained with Reb Chaim. In the ghetto of Mogilev, 50 rubles was a great sum of money, not easy to come by. Uncle Eliezer was sad. But I began to grow up. I realized suddenly what it meant to be a Jew in Tsarist Russia. And now I began to notice many things and to hear many things.
What's that on your head?
My skull cap, Your Excellency.
Who gave you permission to wear it?
But, sir, I am an Orthodox Jew. I must wear it.
So you must wear it, eh?
Yes, Your Excellency.
And it's your religion?
It is, Your Excellency.
Is your religion worth 1 silver ruble to you?
I don't know what you mean.
1 silver ruble. It's a tax, Jew. A tax for wearing a skull cap. Hand it over.
Yes, I was growing up. I learned that a Jew could not leave the ghetto, that a Jew could not own land, that a Jew was abused because he had to live in the city, that a Jew paid a tax for the privilege of eating meat and drinking wine and milling flour and walking the road. The faces grew pinched in the ghetto of Mogilev, and my uncle spoke less and watched silently. Around us, the fields were white with buckwheat, and the forests were thick with birch and ash, but the air was heavy and charged, as though before a rain. Rosh Hashanah, the new year, came, and my uncle said,
"Leshono tovo tikosevu.
Leshono tovo tikosevu. May you be inscribed for a good year." He said it uncertainly, half afraid. And this is how we spent the Holy Week, half afraid. On the Day of Atonement, he put on his special prayer shawl, and we went together to the synagogue. The men of the congregation stood before the ark and saw the holy scrolls taken out as the cantor sang Kol Nidre.
There's no cause for alarm. Be quiet, everyone. It's just a window that's fallen in. Just a window. Please be quiet and continue the service.
Mi om si parimise.
He had asked him to be quiet, but under his shawl he held the stone that had broken the window. Uncle Eliezer stood quietly for a moment. Then he made a sign for me not to follow, and he went out of the synagogue. I waited for him, but he did not return. And then when the services were over, I went outside with the others. There was my Uncle Eliezer. Eliezer, the kind, gentle man, on the ground. And blood was on the ground. And the stone was still in his hand. I do not think they meant to kill him. Men cannot be so cruel. Perhaps it was a joke. He'd done them no wrong, no injury. It was he who was injured. Perhaps that's why they killed him. Men cannot forgive those whom they have injured. It must be so. I was a man now. Three times each day I went to the synagogue and chanted the mourner's prayer for Uncle Eliezer to the prescribed time of 11 months. And for 11 months my garments were rent over my heart to the width of 4 inches, and the face mirror in the house was turned to the wall, and I heard no music, nor was I consoled by idle pastimes. And now I was truly an orphan in the ghetto and a stranger within the gates. And my years to manhood were a sour thing, without joy and without hope. Until one day I saw Shoshana.
I love you also, Abraham.
Truly you were well named, Shoshana. You were a rose of Sharon.
I have no marriage portion to bring you, Abraham.
What do you call your eyes?
Only eyes?
They're gray. They make me writhe like Hananiah or Nebuchadnezzar's furnace.
I have a very scholarly lover.
Oh, don't laugh at me, Shoshana. I know I say foolish things, but my tongue is thick in my mouth and my heart is hurting my ribs.
I know.
Like that with you?
Yes, like that.
Then I have the strength to ask you.
Is it about the future?
Yes, Shoshana.
The future is uncertain. Let us be happy now. Speak about the present, Abraham.
Well, the present is also uncertain.
All right. I shall listen.
Will you wait for me?
Are you leaving, Mogilyev?
Never to return, I hope. Wait, Shoshana. I'm going to America. I shall go to America and work hard and save every kopeck and send for you. Will you come when I send for you?
Yes, I will come.
Then it won't be long. I swear it. May my right arm wither.
No, don't swear, Abraham. I know that you will send for me, and when you send, I shall come. That is enough.
Torah shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. These things and more was Shoshana to me. There in the ghetto, in a mean wooden house between the kitchen chair and the tile oven, I kissed her lips, and the house was no longer mean, and the ghetto was no longer without beauty. And after I had applied for my passport and paid the necessary bribe to the commissioner, Shoshana stood by my side and held my wicker hamper, and there were no tears in her gray eyes.
God bless you, Abraham. God bless you and keep you from harm.
Goodbye, Shoshana.
Wait. I've asked my father to search among the wise sayings for a gift for you. He has written it for me.
Read it, Shoshana.
Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently. Lest thou forget things which thine eyes saw.
Only take heed to thyself and keep
thy soul diligently.
Keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes saw. I will not forget, Shoshana.
From Mogilev to Gomel, from Gomel to Kiev, from Kiev to Odessa, how many versts of gray ice did it give me? And from Odessa down the Black Sea, through the Bosphorus, into the Mediterranean, and across the wide ocean. Is it not time enough and distance enough and wonder enough to make a tongue lose its thickness and a heart its longing? Do not believe it. This is how I came to America. At Castle Garden, the immigration inspectors opened the wicker hamper and a doctor listened to my heart, and not being wise enough to hear the beat of longing, they let me through. I was in New York. It was the deluge, and I was without an ark, friendless, alone, with no money in my pocketbook. I was in America and frightened. So I asked a man how to get to Reb Chaim's second cousin's brother, who lived in a rooming house in Savannah, Georgia, which couldn't be far from New York.
Hmm? That's the language you're talking. I don't know a word you think. I tell you what, just take the first trolley that comes along. Here it comes. That's it.
Providence was with me. I had a coin in my hand, and I gave it to the man who drove the trolley. I rode for many versts. When I thought it was time, I asked if we had come to Savannah, Georgia.
I can't make out what you're saying. You better get off and ask a policeman. There he is, right there.
I got off the trolley and went to a man in a blue uniform who looked like a Cossack but who spoke no Russian.
Eh, what? Can't you speak a tongue I can understand?
I was lonely and troubled. The man in the blue uniform only made me more bewildered.
Hey, trolley! Oh, it's you, Finnerty. Here's a customer for you.
A cash customer?
A guest of the city, Finnerty.
Oh, who says?
I says.
And the traction company, what'll it say?
That one fare, more or less, won't bankrupt them. Now drop him off at the Immigrant Aid Society, Finnerty. Along with you now, Greenhorn. Finnerty doesn't have all day.
At the Immigrant Aid Society, they gave me milk to drink and bread to eat, and I felt better. Then a man whom I did not know gave me a lecture which I did not understand and a book which I could not read, and he also pressed something into my hand.
Go on, take it. It's not charity. Go on, you'll pay it back. Oh, take it. It's $3.
Truly a wonderful land. I walked for many blocks with the $3 in my pocketbook. And finally, on the Lower East Side, I met many who spoke my language. Even one called Epstein, who had been born in Mogilev.
The first thing to do is cut off your sidelocks, Abraham. This is America. We have no Tsar here, and the president doesn't like sidelocks.
Well, does the president know about sidelocks?
One day in America, and he's already asking questions. Of course the president knows. That's why he's the president. Now, you also need a shave and some decent clothes. I'll lend you one of my suits.
That's very good of you.
I came from Mogilev once, didn't I? Where are you going to sleep?
In the synagogue.
You're a regular greenhorn. Here, we don't sleep in the synagogue. You sleep in my house till you find a room.
Thank you.
Now, about work. Are you a tailor?
No.
I didn't think so. There's good money working by cloaks. Too bad. Are you a shoemaker?
No, I study the Talmud.
Don't be foolish. Here, studying the Talmud is strictly for pleasure. It's not a business. All right, you'll have to be a peddler. Now, you have $3. I'll lend you two more. Buy some shoelaces, some needles, some threads, some hairpins, some cheesecloth, hooks and eyes, thimbles.
Oh, where will I buy it?
From me, of course. Don't worry, cost price.
Oh, who'll buy for me?
Tomorrow you'll take the ferry. I'll show you where. Far out in Brooklyn, at the end of the trolley line, there are farms. You don't even have to know how to speak English. Just knock on the door and show your merchandise.
But how?
Questions. How? What? Why? Listen. You'll knock on the door like this. Then the housewife will come out, look at your basket, and pick up a package of needles, let us say. Just hold up 5 fingers, and she will give you 5 cents. That's all there is to it.
I did as Epstein said, and in 2 days I had sold my merchandise. I liked peddling. I saw many things, and I listened carefully to the way people spoke. And in a week I did not have to hold up my fingers, but I could speak the price. And in 2 weeks I could say more things. And then I went to school at night. It was a fine big place on Hester Street. I learned to write and to speak and to read. Every day I sold thimbles and spools of thread, and every night I went to school and studied and made the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. These things I wrote to Shoshana, and she could not believe it. I wrote the things that I saw, and I told her how I was learning the language and had become a citizen, and the lectures I went to hear at Cooper Union, and how I saved my money for her passage. This was happiness. On the Sabbath, Epstein and I would go to the synagogue. And once on a Sunday morning, we went uptown to Carnegie Hall and heard a famous rabbi deliver a talk in English. It was about America and what we owed to it. And he quoted from Shakespeare. And after the talk, Epstein said,
"Who is this Shakespeare? Is he from Mogilev?"
"Of course not. He's a famous writer."
"It irritates me. All the time he mentions Shakespeare."
"Why not?
If Shakespeare has anything to say, let him come and say it himself."
"Epstein, don't be a fool. Shakespeare is dead almost as many years as you have sinned."
"Then why doesn't that ornament of a rabbi speak of people who are living?"
"You don't understand."
"Oh, so now you understand. Now you're telling me. Look who's telling me. Who's long in America, huh? Who lent you $2?
Which I paid back, thank you."
"That's neither here nor there. Now, let me tell you something. When it comes to understanding, I'm not a greenhorn. I know a few things myself. I'm a businessman."
He quarreled with me for 2 days about Shakespeare until we went to Second Avenue together and heard Jacob Adler play King Lear in Yiddish. Then there were no more quarrels.
"Do you know something, Abraham? When you graduate school, I'll give you a present. A set Shakespeare in English."
But I had a better present. Shoshana. There were pogroms in Elizabethgrad and in Berdichev, and it was time for her to come to America. More than time. We were married in the synagogue on Essex Street, and we went to live on East Broadway. A fine street near the park. I was making a living. We didn't have to take in boarders. Shoshana was very proud of me. I said nothing, but my heart was full to overflowing. Truly, she was a rose of Sharon, and more. She also had a head on her shoulders, which I always knew, but perhaps which I did not appreciate enough. Until that day after the Purim festival, when I had a cold.
Out. You're not leaving this house, Abraham.
Oh, it's nothing. Just a cold in my nose.
Listen to him. You're staying home.
No, I have to tend to my business.
Your customers can wait.
No.
I say yes. Besides, you can take care of your business from the house.
How? Oh, excuse me.
You went to school. You know how to write.
Well?
Send a letter to every customer. Put a postcard in every letter with your address on the front. And in the back, mark down everything you sell.
Oh.
Thimbles, spools, cheesecloths, shoe polishes, and everything. All they have to do is to make a cross for whatever they want. Sign their names, drop it in the box, and you'll send it to them by mail. I'll help you.
A regular bail order business. Is that what you beat, Shoshana?
Why not? Now you sit there and don't move. I'm getting you a glass of tea with lemon.
All right, Shoshana.
Thank you.
And that is how I stopped being a peddler and entered the mail order business. Such a simple thing, but her idea. You wonder that I loved her and that our life was good. The Lord was good to us. In time, we had two sons. And they grew like the cedars of Lebanon. But then in America, would you expect less? And on the Sabbath, I did not forget my Uncle Eliezer. And with my sons beside me and Shoshana before my eyes, I opened the Bible to the book of Proverbs. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gate. And do you think it was only for Shoshana that I read these words? It was for something else. For something that gave me a pillow for my head and a shade tree against the sun. For a land of schools and friendly people and cheerful spirits. For a new land as open-hearted as the old land was narrow. Yes, I read these words also for the new land and my land. I say it again to America. Give her of the fruits of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates.
Listen to the sound. Listen to the sound of the iron loom. We ride invisible in the stratosphere on a filament of air, but the sound weaves like a shuttle. Eastward from England, westward from Russia, crossing near the place where the 53rd parallel intersects the 13th meridian. A place called Berlin. And east I ride, and west I ride on the flying shuttle you call the Liberator.
Hey, Joe Berger, look out towards 9 o'clock. You know what it is?
Yeah, I know. It's Muggerland. Free and without a ghetto.
See, what are you batting about, Joe?
Not a thing, Pat. Not a blessed thing. Come on, let's fly on toward Germany. We've got some business there.
You're not kidding.
I will say it for myself, and I will say it for them. Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes saw.
Today's script was written by Morton Wishengrad. The music was written by Henry Brandt and was conducted by Henri Nosco. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leder. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical music. This was Chapter 7 in the series, The Eternal Light, prepared by the Jewish Theological Seminary and presented as a public service by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. Copies of the script may be obtained without cost by writing to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. We wish to thank the NBC University of the Air for permission to present today's script, heard recently over many of these stations as part of the series, They Call Me Joe. This program came to you from New York City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.